Ah, okay. So, pattern and scale in intragranular diffusion. this is work that I did with my colleague Max Hu, now at University of Texas. The unlisted co-author is Chengxuan Liu at PNNL. Actually, this is work that we did on a project that he's part of, and it's sponsored by the Subsurface Biogeochemical Research Initiative of the Department of Energy. Okay, so scientific investigations historically have had two legs. There's the observation and theory, and there's some tension and dialogue back and forth between them. More recently, a third leg has come in, and that's simulation, which is, depending on your perspective, the best or the worst of the two combined. So the study I'm talking about here uses all three legs. The world that it is concerned with is, at least initially, one porous sphere, representing, if you will, a pebble, let's say, in a granular aquifer. And the basic scenario is this. We start with that pebble, let's say, in pure water. Then we add a chemical to the infinite reservoir that chemical diffuses in. Eventually, the intragranular pore space comes to equilibrium with the outside. And then we can remove the chemical from the outside, and this chemical then diffuses out. And if we can measure perfectly or extraordinarily well the mean concentration of the chemical throughout inside the pore, inside the sphere, we're doing pretty well. Okay. The observations we're working with here are the studies done by Ball and Roberts, published in Environmental Science and Technology, having to do with sorption of perchloroethane into Borden sand. Theory, well, if you're looking at theories of diffusion into or out of a sphere, you can't do a whole lot better than Crank's analytical solution, unless your sphere violates some of those assumptions. And, well, as you'll see, we think our spheres do, and so we're also using percolation theory to handle that. The simulation has two components. There's a pore-scale network model with diffusion via random walks, and I won't be going into a lot of detail on it, but we'll see a little bit. But we also work with a finite difference model for, again, reasons that will become apparent. Okay, so we start with some interesting observations that motivated this study. One is that if you look at published accounts of this sort of microcosm I've got on the bottom here, and there are several experiments that deal with this, we often find that the solute uptake or release doesn't match Crank's analytical solution. We have slightly faster release at the beginning and slightly slower release or longer tailing toward the end. Another interesting thing is that while a pebble may have uniform properties, the accessible porosity, the porosity that connects to the outside, frequently is not. Now, these data here are from a completely different study we did this year, having to do with copper and uranium concentrations at depth increments of a few microns into some basalt at the Hanford 300 area. And we see a sort of power law behavior, which is actually what we would have expected from percolation theory. A third observation is that frequently when a model is fit to the data on diffusive uptake or release, we end up having to set these just astonishing and unrealistic tortuosity values. I think Ball and Roberts fitted tortuosities in the range of 10,000, which is hard to justify geometrically. So when faced with these odd observations, one often wonders, is there a common cause behind all these? And our hypothesis is that the common cause between these three issues was simply that the intragranular pores inside that pebble had low connectivity. This implies that the appropriate theoretical framework would be percolation theory, which has to do with pathways and such in sparsely connected pathways. Okay, so percolation theory then tells us that, as highlighted here, accessible porosity, the porosity that connects to the outside, varies with the connectivity, and it varies with distance from the outside. And that's illustrated here. Okay, so here we have the accessible porosity plotted as a function of distance from the edge. So it goes up toward the edge, and then it reaches this plateau at some distance, which we denote chi, from the edge. So beyond chi, we have this constant accessible porosity, and then closer to the edge, the porosity is governed by this power law where beta and nu are known scaling exponents from percolation theory. You can just go look those up. And so if we wanted to parameterize this, given these equations, we would have to know the plateau porosity, and we would have to know this distance, chi. Well, if you know the distance, chi, and you know your radius, you can do some iterations and such. So that kind of comes out. But eventually, at some level, you have to measure this distance, chi, somehow. Likewise, the diffusivity follows a similar power law. Mu is another of those percolation scaling exponents. We get a similar issue, so we would have to measure or fit the plateau diffusion coefficient, and the chi shows up here again. So we have two parameters here, the accessible porosity and the diffusivity, both of which vary with these two variables here, and we can characterize them for the most part with these two measurable or estimatable parameters. Okay, so we conducted two tests. The first was a purely theoretical test. We were looking at, we were comparing two different models. And the second one goes to the experiment. Okay, so first we start by comparing the random walk and the finite difference model. And you'll see in a moment why there's an actual point to this. So we set up the same model. We have a sphere, radius 500 arbitrary units. In each case, we specified what is our connectivity probability. So that's given as an input value. For a random walk model, the diffusion coefficient and chi emerge as functions of this connection probability. If we're given the connection probability, we can estimate the D from theory, but the chi has to be fitted. So in order for the finite difference model to match the random walk model, we have one fitted parameter. Now here's the kicker, because the random walk model took several months to run on a supercomputer at PNNL, and the finite difference model runs in a little less than a second. So, of course, from a practical standpoint, it's nice to be able to run in less than a second. Okay, and I'm just comparing here at two different connection probabilities, complete connection or at the percolation threshold, and the, as up here, the random walk model is black, the finite difference model is red, and you can see the match is extremely good. Here we're looking over 10 orders of magnitude in time. The reason for the funny shapes, we did this net in diffusion, and then at different predetermined points, at internal concentrations of 10, 20, 50, and 90%, we started out diffusion. And so the match is nice across the whole range, and we're very pleased. Okay. The real test, though, how do we do with real data? Because this approach has been criticized for not being able to handle real data well, so that was part of our challenge here. So we get the Ball and Roberts experimental data. They had 7 sand size fractions, so of course the model does the same. They monitored PCE uptake within each sand fraction. I had an easier time. I got Bill Ball's dissertation and digitized the data. They calculated the accessible porosity for each fraction, and so I used theirs. But, of course, I didn't have the diffusion coefficient and the correlation length chi, so those were my 2 fitted parameters. So after Ball and Roberts published their stuff, Haggerty and Gorelick analyzed it using the multi-rate mass transfer model. In fact, this was sort of one of the poster child tests of it. It was a very nice, very nicely done reanalysis of the data. Well, I'm weaseling out and saying I'm predicting it several ways, of which I'll get to in just a moment. So the basic picture here is Ball and Roberts did their PCE uptake in 7 sand size fractions. Then, based on results from the 7 sand size fractions, they predicted how it was in the bulk sand, knowing the size distributions and such. So, let's go back to this several ways. Okay, here's the Haggerty and Gorelick multi-rate mass transfer approach. they fitted a separate diffusion coefficient for each sand fraction. And then I'm looking at, but they didn't have a correlation length. They're assuming there is no correlation length. I tried 1 diffusion that worked for all of the sand fractions, and likewise 1 one correlation length that worked across all sand fractions. I tried 7 of the diffusion and 1, et cetera, et cetera. So let's see what these look like. Okay, the multi-rate mass transfer, it's not so bad here, but you can see, it's not so bad up here, but it kind of misses the mark at the early times, and my models do a good bit better at the early times. So let's look at how the numbers come out. The error sums of squares are fairly similar across all models, and I think that's mainly because there's a lot of noise at the late time. But you'll notice that even with 2 parameters, I get a better fit both in terms of the numbers and a better fit visually than the multi-rate mass transfer model. So better fit with 2 parameters than they got with 7. And then if I go to 8 or 14, I get better, but no one gets excited about that. So let's think about this a little more closely. The models vary mainly at the early times. Every model agrees up at the top here. Whenever I used a model that permitted a correlation length greater than 0, it fit to a correlation length greater than 0. The data seemed to be demanding that non-uniformity in the pebbles or sand. If you have the chi greater than 0, it shifts the mean porosity a little closer to the edge, so you get this faster early exchange. But it decreases the diffusion coefficient deeper inside, so you get the slower late exchange. Bingo. So the various issues I talked about earlier are all resolved with a conceptual change that's physically sound, and it's easy to program. So we have the uptake and release not matching crank. We have a non-uniform intergranular porosity. And we end up with really, really slow apparent intragranular diffusion, although we don't have to talk about tortuosities in the range of 10,000. So to conclude here, properties at the scale of this chi, which is on the order of 10 to 100 micrometers, can change patterns at much larger scales. All of the observed pattern changes appear to have a single cause, the low conductivity of the intragranular pores. And, in fact, the properties at the scale of chi can be readily integrated into a model that treats larger scales. And, in fact, it's fairly easy to program. I should know because I'm not a professional programmer. Again, I'll acknowledge the SBR program at DOE, and I'll be happy to take questions.